Blog Talk Radio.
You want to replay the point? Okay.
Mr. Wawrinka wants to replay the point. 15-0.
Welcome to Replay the Point. Today is Thursday, March 23rd, 2017. Pete Zebron of Tennis Acumen, joined by editor and publisher of Tennis Life, Barry Buss. Good evening, Barry.
Good evening, Peter. Good to be with you again.
Oh, absolutely. And you spent nearly two glorious weeks at the Indian Wells Tennis Garden, Barry, checking out all kinds of action on the grounds. Obviously, Roger Federer got the job done over Stan Wawrinka in the final, but a lot happened leading up to that final. But if you could just, first off, just share your overall observations of what you were able to experience at Indian Wells for 2 weeks.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. It was awesome. You know, I got out there very early in the week on Wednesday night, started on the grounds from Thursday on. You know, you just kind of see the, you know, it's a whole evolution that these events go through. So there's kind of the very, you know, a little slower in the beginning, you know, kind of the event slowly waking up, everyone's kind of getting into their groove. And then you just start to see it escalate, you know, when the star power kicks in, you know, when Fed and Djokovic and those guys start playing their first rounds on that first weekend. I thought the doubles was a fascinating addition to the tournament more than anything else. This is the one of the few weeks out of the year that you get some of the top guys to play the doubles. And that was actually the crowd attraction. That was really the fan favorite. You know, I saw Kyrgios play the Bryans, and, you know, he packed 8,000 people in at night, and there wasn't an empty seat in the place. And Djokovic's doubles matches were incredibly entertaining. Nadal's were entertaining. I mean, it was really, really fascinating to be out there. So really, really enjoyed it. You know, they take very, very good care of us up in the press box, and, you know, we get to kind of do our thing. And it was very, very exciting to be out there all week.
No, I agree. And the doubles, obviously, star power, as you mentioned, with the doubles, especially at Indian Wells, Barry. Obviously, some of the bigger names don't play doubles at the majors, but everyone seems to want to play doubles at Indian Wells. And as you very well know, and I've gone to Indian Wells several years as well, it's wildly popular with the crowds at Indian Wells. A big international flavor there, but it just seems like the residents of the Coachella Valley in particular really enjoy watching doubles. And as you mentioned, Kyrgios having 8,000 people at his doubles match, I saw a Nadal playing Fognini in doubles 2 years ago, and that court number two was absolutely full as well. So, absolutely right. And we're going to talk a little bit more about doubles, but Barry, you had a chance to experience probably the envy of most of the tennis world. You got a chance to see a Federer Nadal match, and this one ended probably a little quicker than people thought. But I did see a tweet that you sent out. Really shocking and stunning that there was an empty corporate skybox or two that was empty for that match. I couldn't figure that out, but if you could just take our listeners through what it was like to be on hand for a Federer-Nadal match.
Yeah, no, I definitely was, that was the first one I've seen live of them. There was a buzz in the air. You know, we kind of, you know, when the draw came out, obviously there was that the quarter of death where you had Djokovic and Nadal and Federer and Kyrgios and Zverev and even Anderson and Johnson. I mean, it was a very loaded section of a draw, very once in a, you know, the odds of that happening are quite low. But so there was a lot of buzz about that. So basically it was a twin bill that day. You got Djokovic and Kyrgios followed by Federer and Nadal. So the stadium was packed. The energy was electric. And right from the first ball, I mean, I honestly have never seen Federer hit the ball that hard right from the start. So I think he's kind of made it, you know, I'm not sure if this is Lubicic or just he's just kind of got a little more confidence in his backhand now, but he's just not going to allow himself to be bullied by Nadal anymore. So he really, really took the tennis to him early, broke him right off the bat, and he really never looked back. And once he got his confidence going, I've never seen him really play quite that well. I mean, there really wasn't anything Nadal could do to back him down. But yeah, it was a very exciting. It was a really exciting event. The crowd, I would say the crowd, at first I thought it was pretty predominantly Roger, but then by the end of that thing, it was a pretty split crowd. So you really get an appreciation for just how, you know, the star power of both of these guys and how popular they are and how they really, as ambassadors of the game, they just they really do stand apart from everybody else, and to have them on the court at the same time was really quite remarkable.
No, I agree, and I'm glad you said that about how hard Fed was hitting, because obviously, you know, being there is one thing, seeing it on TV is another, and that's one thing I noticed, and people are saying, okay, he's really improved his backhand quite a bit. Could it be the racket? Could it be Ljubicic? Combination of both. But the thing that jumped out at me, obviously improving the backhand, but the weight of shot on his forehand, he was just crushing that ball. And, you know, obviously another thing that jumped out at me, Barry, a couple things actually. A Rafael Nadal match that lasts just 68 minutes. Usually if we're going to see something with Nadal playing in 68 minutes, it's usually he's won a match in 68 minutes because there's a storm coming. For him to be on the losing end of a 68-minute match is shocking in itself. But really what jumps out at me more was the fact that Federer, 4 out of 5 in breakpoint conversions, this is something that has been his nemesis against his nemesis all these years. And Fed's been able to clean up his breakpoint conversions against the field, let alone Nadal. That to me, those combination of things were just shocking. And he's playing exceptionally well this year.
Yeah, he's got a confidence about him that you know, we haven't seen in a few years from him. And part of that might have been just taking his lumps. I think we spoke about this on a previous show, where how these guys do come back from breaks extremely refreshed and extremely hungry, and just with a much more of a purpose and a focus. And you know, if these guys could figure out how to balance out, you know, get 6 months off somewhere in their career in the middle of their workload, it would do them wonders. But no, he just came right off from the bat. I mean, right the first game, he just smothered him. He just was just cracking the ball. He's taking the ball extremely early, and I think that's the one thing. You know, obviously he's hitting it hard, but where you hit the ball from is so important. And he's just taking everybody's time away. And, you know, and to his credit, he's confident. He's making all this, you know, listen, he's ripping over these backhands and he's making them. I think if he knocks a few of those 10 feet long, maybe he hesitates a little bit on his free swing. But, you know, he's making the early ones. He's getting ahead early. He's one of the sport's great front runners in history. And there's really no looking back for him. I mean, he was never really, I don't think he lost a serve to the finals, and he really wasn't pushed, you know, throughout the whole week.
Yeah, I want to ask you about Nadal, obviously. You know, he's been in a couple of finals already this year, has lost them both, including the Australian Open final. But not too many people talking about Nadal. Obviously, Federer is getting the spotlight here and whatnot. Djokovic is in the spotlight as well for other reasons. So is Murray. But, you know, Rafa's had a pretty steady 2017. That said, no titles. But obviously running into somebody like Fed playing at the level he's playing, Rafa's had a pretty good 2017 so far, but in having a personal vantage point at Indian Wells, what do you see in Rafa's game, and is he really that far off from maybe making it happen, or is he just running into buzzsaws at this point?
Oh, I think he's going to be a real, real force on the clay court season coming up here. He's hitting the ball big. I think he's got caught up against a couple you know, free-swinging guys who got hot with Query down in Acapulco, and obviously Federer in Australia and here in Indian Wells. But I think, you know, he looks extremely fit. He's serving bigger than I've seen him serve in a long time, routinely in the 120s, which has been a rare, you know, it's a rare occasion for him. Usually he's been a high teens kind of guy. But no, I think he's, you know, you get him on that red clay over the course of in the spring coming up here, I think he's going to be really, really challenging to beat. You know, he's never won Miami. We'll talk about Miami a little bit more coming up here, but, you know, with the conditions so slow down there, I think that plays really, really well for him. He looks extremely healthy. I mean, I've never seen him looking, he's not wearing a bunch of bandages and stuff like that. So I think he's going to be a threat coming, you know, through the spring here. I think, you know, with a couple of the top guys hurting a little bit, you know, Murray and Djokovic question marks, and Federer is probably going to play a limited clay court season. I just don't know where the pressure is going to come on Nadal, you know, during the spring here. And once he gets a good head of steam up on the red stuff, he's tough to take out.
That's a good point. I very good report on Rafa, Barry. I was curious as to, you know, what your vantage point was on that. And that's a very solid report. Rafa even said he expects to play much better in Miami. Again, not that he was playing poorly, but as we all know, Rafa is kind of like Stan in a tournament. He just needs match play, and once Rafa gets that, and obviously we're coming into his time of the year, a lookout. So I like what you said with respect to he's fit, he's serving well, and again, some of the bigger names are going to play either limited schedules or they're on the shelf at this point. So who will challenge Rafael Nadal here coming up beginning really in Monte Carlo. And we're going to shift gears a little bit right now. Barry, Novak Djokovic plays Nick Kyrgios twice in a very short span of time. Second time now, Djokovic has not won a set against Nick Kyrgios. Thing that jumped out at me the most is he only won 14% of his first serve points against Nick Kyrgios in Indian Wells. Wasn't much better in Acapulco the first time they played at 19. Certainly want to talk and expound on Nick Kyrgios, but at this point in time, let's talk about Novak Djokovic, because obviously he's got a win over Murray, so far a title earlier in the year, but again, a surprise loss to Istomin at the Australian Open. And Nick Kyrgios, does he have Novak Djokovic's number? But first off, let's talk about Novak Djokovic. On the shelf right now with an injury as well, elbow injury. Want to get your thoughts if you saw anything that may have alluded to the fact of why he's on the shelf, and where is Novak Djokovic's game at this point?
Hey, it's complicated. As you said, he beat Murray. He's got a couple really nice wins over Del Potro where he's fought hard. I mean, the third set he played with Del Potro out in Indian Wells tonight was the best I've seen him play, you know, in some time. So he looked like he had his mojo back. You know, I honestly, I've never seen him this thin in my life, and he doesn't look strong like he used to. His upper body just looks emaciated to me. It just doesn't, there's something not right there. And I think, you know, he's starting to show up a little bit in the wrist problems he had last year, and the elbow and the other little ailments he's getting. So, so that's something, you know, he's got to consider. Obviously these guys know their bodies extremely well. And, you know, those extra 5 or 10 pounds of muscle does affect movement over time. And I think they've all chosen to play as light as possible. I mean, you look at Federer now too, he's extremely skinny for someone of that stature. But the thing I really picked up on in the Kyrgios match, I mean, there's a couple things with the Kyrgios match here, both matches, actually. I think he's had a total of one break point in the four sets, which is just stunning. But what really, really touched me in the Indian Wells match in particular, I got a chance to watch the whole thing. He's on the ball. I mean, he's getting his racket on the return. He's just getting blown through. And I've never seen Djokovic just that Kyrgios is just a different level of athlete. I don't think he's seen something like this where, I mean, the ball's on his racket, but he's blowing it through him at 140, 138 consistently, and he's spotting it. But it's mostly the second serves. The second serves were 115, 118, even hit a 126 ace in the tiebreaker against him. And I think that just gets Djokovic completely out of sorts, and Kyrgios doesn't give him any rhythm. He's not going to give him, he's not going to sit back there and grind with him. He hits the drop shots, does the tweeners. He goofs it off a little bit and gets under Djokovic's skin. And there was just a very, very telling point in the first game of the match, actually, where Djokovic was serving, where they got into a very long, long rally, probably 20, 25 shots. And Kyrgios was just sitting back there, just pushing the ball back. I think he was just kind of sending the message to him that you can't hurt me. And I can stay out here all day, and I'm just going to push the ball back, and there's nothing you can do to hurt me. But when I get the ball in my hand, I'm going to blow it through you. And he did. And I think he's in his head. I think he plays a style of game that Djokovic doesn't like, because he really does take the racket out of his hand and doesn't allow him to dictate. And, you know, as matchups go, you know, styles make fights, and that's just not a good fit for Djokovic. I don't think he likes the lack of rhythm in playing Kyrgios is something that's going to be a little bit of a problem for him going forward.
Yeah, the scoreboard shows very tight matches, but I mean, realistically, some of the games are just absolute blowouts. And I agree, he's in his head. It's really tough to figure out because Novak Djokovic is so mentally strong. Nothing seems to faze him, or at least until Nick Kyrgios came along. And I just want to ask you, Barry, about what kind of spillover effect this might happen. Obviously, Novak Djokovic, since winning Roland Garros last year, you know, lost to Sam Querrey at Wimbledon. He did rebound and win the Canada after, you know, losing in the Olympics and whatnot. But it just seems that the hunger quotient, in my opinion, for Djokovic, once he was able to get Roland Garros, it's just a different deal right now. He's even said there's more things important in my life than tennis. And I get that as a human being, and he's a dad and whatnot. But at the same point in time, you know, I want to ask you a sort of a two-part question about that, and also, you know, really for the last 5.5 years, Djokovic seemingly gets extremely deep in tournaments, either playing in a final and winning them, or, you know, losing in the final, or even a tough semifinal. Have the miles really caught up to him with respect to all the time that he's spent on court, you know, really for 5.5 years, going literally wire to wire in most everything he's entered?
Yeah, I mean, I think if we look at the last 5 years, there's no doubt he's probably played more tennis than anybody in the world, probably by a good deal. You know, he plays on Sunday. You know, if he enters the tournament, he's playing on Sunday. You know, I think if you look back historically, I think, you know, 5 year cycles are about what these guys, you know, what the great ones have. You know, you had Federer from 04 to 09. You're looking at Nadal from basically 2008 to 2013, and then Djokovic basically 2010 to the present. So, I mean, you know, he stretches out a little bit further. So, yeah, I think this is the first little bump, you know, significant bump. You know, he's always had a couple losses here and there, but this is a shot in his confidence. This is a little bit uncharted waters for him, where he's just not really, you know, he's been, as you said, just this consummate professional who is so focused and so driven. And, you know, I think the success just fed itself, and, you know, and he knew he was doing all the right things. And, you know, he just had this aura about him that he wasn't, you know, he was unbeatable. And now that aura has been broken. And so we'll see. You know, I fully believe that he'll get back. He's still 29, and he's in phenomenal shape. So I think this is something he's going to have to work through. And as we've seen with Federer, obviously at 35, almost 36 coming back, these guys will, you know, they'll have their little hiccups and they'll make their way back. So I firmly believe in him. I believe he needs to get a coach again that's going to get in his ear and crack the whip. And hopefully he's not hurt too bad here. I know he's taking this week off in Miami, so that's not, you know, he's a 6-time champion down there, and that's not an easy time for him to miss. But I think, you know, it's you know, there's some challenges out there for him, but I fully believe he'll get his act together and be back at the top here very soon.
Yeah, thanks for that great analysis there, Barry. And in that match against Kyrgios, did you see anything that he was favoring, and anything that might point to an injury, which is why he's on the shelf? And a sidebar question along those lines too. You mentioned he needs to get a coach. Any recommendations of who might be the tonic for Novak Djokovic at this point in time?
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know, I don't know exactly what what works for him. You know, obviously having Becker there was a really great relationship, even though it would seem like they were, you know, it was more of a business than friendship. But, you know, maybe something like that where he gets, that seemed to work really well for him. So I'm not exactly sure what his where his goals are for that going forward. I didn't see anything physical. He looked fantastic. I mean, the Del Potro match was wonderful. He was serving well. I mean, really, he just lost to serve the one time first game against Kyrgios, then he held every other time, you know, fairly routinely himself. So, you know, he seemed to be serving fine. He was, you know, he's hitting the ball good. He just doesn't look as formidable as he once did. He just looks like he's still moving wonderfully. He's chasing everything down. He just doesn't seem like he has the strength he once had. And you know, and just looking at him, he doesn't look as the same specimen he once was. And I think that's something he'll have to, you know, address here, you know, make a mid-career change here, I think, is in order for him. But, you know, I think he just needs to get a little rest. But as you said, he's played so much tennis here, and a lot of things have happened in his life, and it's just time he needs to kind of recalibrate his priorities and come back hungry again, I think.
That's a good point. And before we get to Nick Kyrgios, Barry, do want to talk about Andy Murray, the world number one, who actually, despite not winning a match at Indian Wells, actually increased his number one ranking lead over Novak Djokovic. Obviously, Djokovic, the defending champion, Indian Wells and Miami, so that'll stretch out a little bit more, even though Murray's not playing. But Murray loses his one and only match to qualifier Vasek Pospisil. Out of Indian Wells right before he got underway. And question on that, because Pospisil, obviously you were kind of wondering, you know, what's going on? This is a pretty good player here, but, you know, has losses to Michael Moe. He was a finalist in the San Francisco Challenger. He was supposed to come to Tempe the week after that. He got in as a special exception. He did not come to Tempe, but here's a guy who's just playing challengers, Barry, you know, a month ago, and takes out the world number one. So this is not about Pospisil, but I want to ask you what's not happening right now for Andy Murray. It just seems that he spent so much time, energy, effort trying to chase down the world number one. He got there and just really looks a little flat so far in 2017. Has not, you know, Australian Open, Indian Wells, and now even Miami, not even reaching the quarters at any of those places.
Yeah, no, he's playing some sloppy tennis. I mean, I watched him, you know, he's just dropping his serve all over the place, and this is not something that he did. I mean, I think if you go back to the loss in Australia to Zverev, I think he lost to serve 7 or 8 times in those 4 sets, and then he dropped to serve 4 times against Pospisil, you know, on a very slow hard court, which is just should never happen. I mean, he's obviously breaking still. He's doing his normal thing, but once these rallies get going, he's vulnerable. And I think some guys are starting to learn how to play him a little bit better. I mean, I thought Pospisil played a very smart match. He took a lot of the pace off the ground stroking rallies. He wasn't, just mixing it up. He wasn't going to let Murray just get into his kind of absorb your pace. And, just trying to hit through Murray has proven to not be a very, very good strategy or or good job security.
Yeah.
So I just think he played a very smart match, and he played the big points really, really well. And Pospisil hit a bunch of huge, huge shots when he needed to. And he looks very athletic. His best tennis is very, very good. He's still going to have a couple hiccups out there, but his best tennis is outstanding. And, he's always been, he can compete with these guys. And so I think in totality, I just think it's something that Murray, as you said, he played a ton of tennis to get to number one last year. He'll be up by over 4,000 ranking points after Miami here, which is pretty incredible. So, you can use a little rest and enjoy it. And I think more than anything else, I think he's probably worried about, Fed is basically scooping up all the points right now. I think the Fed fans are already worrying about next January, where he's got all these points to start defending. But no, I think as the rankings go, he's in a great season, a good place. He just needs to heal up and just shoot for the, really target the French Open. That's one he needs to win and go from there. But I think he'll be fine. I just think he's played a ton of tennis there.
No, good points. We're going to talk about Nick Kyrgios right now. I'm going to lead off by elaborating a bit on a match I saw him play last year on court number 3 in Cincinnati against Borna Coric. Barry, I said in the photo pit for that entire match, Kyrgios held the match point. Borna Coric was playing some outstanding tennis. He beat Nick Kyrgios. The next day he beat Nadal. And unfortunately for him, he had to retire in the first set against the eventual champion, Marin Cilic. But I've seen glimpses of Kyrgios here and there, but that was the first full match I saw. And right then and there, I said, this is by far the greatest by a mile raw talent of a tennis player I've ever seen. Obviously, Fed is amazing to watch, but he's had to work for that. Nick Kyrgios, it seems like he can just roll out of bed and bang 146 second serves, and it's nothing. It's almost like the Fabio Fognini approach to serving, only Kyrgios does it with thunder. I am absolutely amazed at this guy and his ability to play, and no fear against Djokovic, someone who has beaten Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic the very first time he's played them. A little bit different story against Andy Murray. He's played 15 sets and only won one of those. Can't quite figure that out. Maybe too much respect. But you got a chance to see the Nick Kyrgios-Novak Djokovic match. I want you to elaborate on that match, on Nick Kyrgios, and then we can talk a little bit about, unfortunately, the quarterfinal that didn't happen.
Yeah, I actually wrote a piece on our Tennis Life website, When Generations Collide, and it was fascinating to watch Kyrgios, Djokovic, who's probably been the best player of this decade, playing against Kyrgios, who is the next evolution in modern tennis. He's the first guy. Listen, there's a lot of guys out there who can bang the ball, hitting 140, and we got Raonic's, we got the really big guys who can do it. He's the first one who can move like these other guys. So there's the movement of the Djokovic, Nadal, Murray class who can defend the court with the power that we, and explosiveness that we've just never seen before. So that this combination, this is kind of what we were concerned, when you think about what's next, the next generation or next evolvement in tennis, if you look at our anthropological chart of how tennis develops, I think the power baseliner defender, your Nadals, your Murrays, your Djokovics, these guys around 6'2", 6'3", who can just go all day, that's kind of maxed out. I just don't know if anybody can come and do that any better than they have. And I think when you bring in a Kyrgios like this, who's so explosive, so he can play the backcourt game with these guys. He's a shot maker extraordinary. He can hit whatever he needs to hit. He plays a looser style of play, and then he can just basically take the racket out of your hand. And I think this is what the future looks like. It's a little, it's awful raw, and it's not this polished professionalism that we've gotten real spoiled with this last generation. But, I watched him play Zverev the round before the Djokovic match, and at no time you know, Alexander Zverev is, you know, like 18 or 19 in the world. At no time did I think Zverev had any chance of winning that match. And you could just tell this was a man who's, you know, just a couple years older playing a boy, and just the confidence that he had on that court was just was fascinating to me. So it was a real interesting day watching all four of these guys play, the two best players from last decade and the best player from currently with Djokovic, and then the future of the game. What happened after that in this quarterfinals was disappointing. You know, this place with Annie Wills was extremely excited for this match, and you know, he pulled the ripcord on this thing in the morning. I understand the chain of command wasn't all that well taken here. There was no emergency rush to a doctor, or, you know, I think he tweeted that he wasn't coming, you know, and he was on a plane to Miami before we knew it. So I don't, you know, as for that, I'm not going to be conspiratorial here. I'm not exactly sure what happened, but, you know, I hope he's feeling better and has a good Miami. But so, yeah, it was a little bit disappointing that those two didn't get a chance to square off, but, you know, he's making it. He's, you know, when he's loose like this, and I think his girlfriend was out there too at Indian Wells, and he seems to be really comfortable in his skin when they're clicking and they're around. And he's, you know, he's like a big kid, and he's just extremely relaxed out there. I think the doubles was great for him. And these guys are having fun. They're playing. They're loose. You know, it just keeps him in a good mood, and I think that really, really translates into good play. If he's happy and relaxed, I think he can execute out there, and he's not stressed out. So. It's the future, and it's coming fast, and hopefully he'll be able to keep it together and you know, take the throne or the torch into the next decade.
No, it's a good report, and obviously it takes seven best of fives to win a major, Barry. I agree, he is the future. Any timeline where we might expect him to, if not challenge for, win a major?
Well, this has been my critique of all of these, you know, the next gens. And we've had a couple of next gens here that just haven't really panned out. You know,
right.
Until somebody, you know, again, these guys have these signature victories, and, you know, he beats Djokovic, and then he comes out and loses the next round to Query. So we're having a lot of that from these guys where they have these noticeable wins, but they don't back them up. And, you know, until these guys start putting – you know, they have to win a major. They have to go deep in these Masters 1000s. They have to win a couple of them, even just to be in the conversation about being the best in the world. And they're so far from that. I mean, none of these guys have been able, even Dominic Thiem, Zverev, you can go right down the line, Dimitrov, they just have not been able to back up the results. And I think part of it is just the incredible depth and just the talent that's at the top of the game and throughout the top 20. I mean, you've got to win four or five marquee matches down to win one of these events, and then, as you were just saying, if you take it to the major level, we're talking 3 out of 5. You know, you're gonna have to deal with adversity. Now, one thing I'm waiting to see for Kyrgios, and this is probably the real barometer for him, I need to see him get down a couple sets and not play well against a very good player, find a way back, and that's exactly, we're not seeing that from him. When these guys are fair weather players, they are front runners. You know, when things are good, they're good. But, you know, you have to be able to win when you don't have your best stuff. You have to be able to win when you're getting zoned on. You have to find a way. And that's one thing that's really lacking here. So there's still quite a few question marks out there. Obviously, just on a raw talent perspective, he is the best thing out there. But that does not always translate into results, in the future results, and into, you know, into slams. So the jury's still out, in my opinion. And we have to be, you know, we have to be patient with these guys. So, yeah, listen, he's 23. So, you know, the time is now. You know, he's got to make something happen in a couple of years.
Yep. Great analysis. Just a couple more Nick Kyrgios questions, Barry. He mentioned he's going to take his time to find the right coach. Want to see who you might recommend for him, and also concurrently, how much do you think, you know, being around Leighton Hewitt for Davis Cup has helped Nick Kyrgios, if at all?
Yeah, I mean, I would almost, you know, there's no formal coaching relationship there, but, you know, the Hewitt presence in his life right now seems to be comforting and relaxing him. You know, I think more for Kyrgios, it's not so much a tennis thing. It's going to be a personality thing, and it's someone he can really connect with and stuff. Obviously, he's still in fantastic shape. So he's doing the work off the court on his own. You know, you just don't go out there, you know, and play this level of tennis with, you know, the fitness required to be this, you know, a successful as he's been. you know, that just doesn't, you don't wake up with that. So he's obviously doing the work, and he's still, you know, he's a disciplined kid. He's not he's not out all night doing that kind of stuff. So as for who's going to take over for him, I really don't know. What a tough job, huh?
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to be, if he wins, he's going to get the credit. If he loses, you're going to take the blame. So, he seems to be fine right now. I think the less voices coming at him, the better right now. He's in a good little place. Just let him, he can have mentors and people helping him from behind the scenes and just go with it that way, I think.
I agree. Yeah, real pleasure to watch Nick Kyrgios. Obviously, whenever he's playing, get to the court, get to a TV set, it's going to be a wonderful experience any way you slice it. So, Barry, want to move on to the finalist at Indian Wells, his best ever result at Indian Wells, Stan Wawrinka. Almost went out to Nishioka midway through the tournament. As Stan goes through these tournaments, as he continues to advance round by round, he seems to gather momentum, gather steam. And Stan, the back end of a tournament is extremely dangerous. Maybe not so much against Federer on a hard court, but he played well against Roger. But your take on Stan Wawrinka? I saw him play Indian Wells last year, the day he lost Barry, he lost to David Goffin on court number two. Stan could not keep the ball on the court. His backhand was miserable. That said, he had a couple of match points. Goffin was able to get the win. Stan was still good enough where he almost got the win that day. And obviously, Stan Wawrinka, good enough in 2017 to get to the final. Your thoughts on Stan's week at Indian Wells this year?
Yeah, he does have a pattern here. That's a very unique one where he kind of comes in, almost doesn't look like, he's checking Expedia, to see how quick he can get out of town. Doesn't seem like he's fully invested. He Houdini's his way out of these matches. He just plays some very indifferent tennis early in the early rounds. He did it at the U.S. Open last year with Evans. He was down a match point. Next thing you know, he comes back and catches fire and he wins the title. He's done this a few times now. And then this Nishioka served for the match twice against him. And Stan was all over the place. He Houdini's his way out of that one. And he wins a thriller against Dominic Thiem, 7-6 in the third. That was a very, very well-played match. Then he gets his legs underneath him. I mean, he absolutely tuned up Karina Busto in the semis. That was a mismatch. And obviously, Federer, he was 3-19 going into that final, and now
right.
He's 3-20. He's never beaten him on a hard court, so it's always going to be a bit of a challenge there. Roger's got just a little bit enough game to, to break him down a little bit. But listen, he's the top seed at Miami right now. How about that? Who would have called that one? So, he's a force. He's a difficult out. He's serving very big. He's just, I think from the backcourt of all the players I saw, I think he's still probably hitting the heaviest ball, though I don't like where he's hitting it from. He's probably 15, 20 feet behind the baseline half the time. But but from shot for shot, though, I think he's pounding it as good or as hard as anybody out there. So if he's making them, as you said, he can blow hot and cold. But if he gets it going, he's a tough, tough out.
Yeah, I was shocked at how deep behind the baseline Stan is on the returns. I honestly couldn't believe it, but obviously he was able to make it happen, gets all the way to the final. And, Barry, just a couple other guys to talk about at Indian Wells and their experience there before we move on to Miami. Jack Sock, very nice run, takes out Nishikori in the quarterfinal. That result really surprised me, but Sock has been playing well in the Masters 1000s of late. Did lose to Federer in the semifinal. No shame in that. Didn't really play well in the first set, but was very much competitive in the second set. Your thoughts on where Jack Sock is? And sidebar question of that, obviously, I still feel that he should be in better shape. Obviously, his shelf life is only so long as a professional tennis player. I'm thinking that if he gets with the fitness program, nice to see what else he might be able to accomplish. I don't really feel he's there yet. And your thoughts on Jack Sock?
He's got a dad bod. He's 24. I don't know what is going on with him. He's a funny guy. I mean, listen, he's got to be in fantastic shape to do what he's doing out there. But you're right. He's not sculpted like these other guys. Let's just put it that way. I thought he's been a breath of fresh air out there. His match with Dimitrov was thrilling. He's kind of Stadium 2 out there has become his home his home away from home. They put him out there. He fills it. He's the home favorite. He's got a lot of moxie. He's got a lot of game. He plays well to the crowd. He is the kind of the breath of fresh air that American tennis has needed for some time now. He's got the personality. He's a fan favorite, and he wins. He wins big matches, and he doesn't clutch. He clutches out. So the Dimitrov match, the Nishikori match, he had the place rocking out there. You know, obviously he's a little bit overmatched against Fed, with, you know, his backhand's going to be a little bit it's going to be tough against the top guys like that. But no, listen, I think he's still got some upside. He'll be tough on the clay. He's hitting the ball big. He's confident right now, and I'm a huge fan. I enjoy watching him play, and I'm 100% behind him.
How much do you think his doubles play has helped translate into his ability to play well in singles?
I'll tell you right now, I've always kind of done an unofficial study of this. For the guys who have the heavy Western grips on their forehand, he has far and away the best feel at the net I've ever seen. Now, he's got touch to spare up there. He's able to get, you know, getting that grip all the way around from the heavy Western into the volley grip has always been a tough ask for a lot of those guys.
Sure.
He has got he's got tremendous feel up there. So he can finish. He can finish the net. You know, he's not a traditionally solid baller. He's kind of uses his hands a lot, but I mean, which is really does separate him from a lot of the other guys out there. He's able to, you know, from the service line in, he's very comfortable, and he finishes, and which is great. So, no, I definitely think it's helped him. I think it's gotten him a lot of reps, a lot of serving, a lot of returning. You know, I think he does struggle a little bit on the return against the bigger servers. You know, he doesn't quite figure out how to, whether it is to bunt it back and get it started or take in full swing. So, you know, a lot of racket head movement in the swing zone in the return there. So that does get him a little bit of trouble. But listen, you know, he's probably, you know, he could maybe get to top 10, I think. I don't think he's going to go much higher than that. But I think, you know, for an American, you know, I'd like to see him in the second week of the Open this year. I think that's a very strong possibility. And I think the stadium one would get behind him.
I agree, and thank you for those points about his doubles and the fact that he impresses you so much. That's a heck of a takeaway for Jack Sock, a large compliment, too. And so I appreciate your analysis on that. And, Barry, last player I would like to ask about with what you saw at Indian Wells this year is someone that I saw last year defeat Jack Sock at Indian Wells. That's Dominic Thiem. I joined that match in progress late in the first set. Thiem won the first set. Sock rallied to win the second set, then a very strange result in the third set. Thiem was leading 5-love in the third set. Sock broke him to go to 1-5, and then Jack Sock broke him to lose the match. So Dominic Thiem broke Jack Sock 4 times in the third set and to win that match. But this is someone that obviously he's been on the radar for tennis aficionados for quite some time. Strength is on clay. I can see a couple of Roland Garros titles in his career before it's all said and done. But I'm really impressed with what Dominic Thiem has been able to do in a fairly short amount of time on hard court, because he really wasn't all that good on hard court not too long ago. Saw him lose to Robbie Ginepri, of all people, in Cincinnati when Ginepri was, you know, on his last legs, if you will, but he was still good enough to beat Thiem. Your thoughts on Dominic Thiem, on what you saw at Indian Wells, and maybe what we can expect from him in the next few years?
Yeah, it's a complicated situation with him. I mean, he's instinctively a clay courter. You know, watching him and Wawrinka play was almost hilarious, since both these guys were 15 to 20 feet behind the baseline, just swinging as absolutely as hard. You know, if anybody could learn to take the ball early. And I wrote a piece about him, too. It was kind of the battle of the one-handers, or the beautiful one-handers, that didn't really materialize because they're all just running around their backhands to hit their forehands. It was like, you know, it's like going to go see your favorite band and they don't play your favorite song. You know, it's like, come on, guys. I came for the backhand there. Listen, he's a specimen. He's serving. He's really jacked up his serve. Now he's popping that thing at 140. Even at night, he was in the low 140. So he's a real, real physical specimen. Obviously, the buzz out there is he's overplaying. He's playing too much tennis, and you know, hopefully he won't wear himself out. I just think he's got an interesting dynamic here. He wants to take your first serve on the baseline, which I just don't quite understand. The one hander, he's up there trying to take, you know, semi full cuts off the, you know, off your first serve, taking it early. And then as soon as he gets it in play, he backs up 15 feet So the whole thing's a little backwards. And if I were him, I would lay back 10, 15 feet, get the ball in play, and then work your way forward. So he's got a lot of room for improvement in his, you know, I would say his mid-court game and his front-court game, where if he could just learn how to take these big ground strokes a little bit earlier and dictate play. But he's just constantly putting himself in bad position. I just felt that he's so far back so frequently that he's throwing himself off balance. The placement on his shots just isn't what I expected from someone like that. He's hitting it beautifully, but it's just not spotting his shots like he needs to do. So, but I think that's the stuff with, he's got room for improvement there. But, he's a clay court mentality playing on a hard court, so it's always a tough ask to get these guys to play a little closer to the line and, you know, be able to take that ball early and smother their opponents. So, but I've got, you know, he's got a big-time serve, and he's a competitor, and I think he's going to be there.
That's a pretty huge first serve in the 140s. That's huge, and I love your analogy there, the Team Wawrinka battle that you go see your favorite band and then they'll play your favorite songs. That's beautiful. I like how you put that. And Barry, before we move away from Indian Wells and talking about Miami a little bit, anything else that you were able to experience at Indian Wells? Perhaps you can elaborate a little bit on the clinic that you did with Nick Bollettieri.
Well, that was very fun. So part of our tennis life experience is to, you know, we just don't want to sit up in the press box and report about tennis. So that's been done. So we're a very, very kind of a boots on the ground organization. We did a fundraiser for a peer of mine whose son is having a little bit of trouble a couple of weeks ago, and had a great turnout with guys like Jimmy Pugh and Elliot Telscher and Robert Lansdorf, who came out to support our situation there. And then out in the desert, we had Nick Bollettieri come out, and Justin Gimelstob came out with his son, and we had a nice little workout there that we did with a bunch of our campers out in the desert. That was 3 hours. Bollettieri's 86, and he's just he's absolutely on. He was fantastic. I mean, just telling stories, he could have spent the whole day there doing it. So it was really incredibly charming. You know, the one thing I really did notice out in the desert that was really disappointing to me was the women's, just the lack of energy around the women's tour. You know, obviously for the five most marketable women, Serena, Sharapova, Azarenka, and Kvitova were not there. And the girls who were at the top there, you know, Venus, you know, Halep and Kerber are just, you know, after very scratchy starts to 2017. And, Venus is all bandaged up. You know, you just see her just kind of, she's like begging somebody to take the torch from her. You know, she's like, I've been carrying you gals for 20 years now. Can somebody else do this for me, please? So, it was a little bit, disconcerting, you know, especially coming on the heels of Ray Moore's, you know, debacle there a year ago, saying the women are riding the men's coattails. They could have had a little better showing at that event, but unfortunately they're a little bit leaderless and rudderless right now, and hopefully they'll get back to their way here in the spring. But other than that, you know, I think when the top guys are playing and they're healthy and you know, you just get an appreciation for how, you know, just the rock stars that they are. I mean, the international flavor at this event now is fascinating. I spent quite a bit of time in the crowd and just kind of trying to understand where all the fans are coming from and why they come out to these events. And you just really, you know, this is the only time that, you know, the big guys come west of the Mississippi. This is it. You know, they come out this one time, Indian Wells, and it's probably going to remain that way. These events are so big now, and they're, you know, you better have a 15,000-20,000 seat stadium to accommodate the, you know, the Federers and Nadals of the world. Otherwise, your tournament's not going to be able to support itself. So, you know, and real estate being what it is on the West Coast, you're just not going to be able to plop down a facility like they have out in the desert there. You need some real estate, and so they have it there, and it's a wonderful event. You know, full credit to Larry Ellison. He keeps making that the grounds and the event even more exciting every year. So full credit to the event. They've really turned that into, you know, one of the premier events of the year for these guys, and you know, full credit.
No, that's great, and appreciate your efforts with Tennis Life again, helping someone out in need with respect to a fundraiser. That's great. Sure. Some very nice names that you included there that helped out with that. That's fantastic. And Barry, we're going to talk just briefly about Miami. You talked a little bit about Stan Wawrinka, the number one seed. Nice for him to get a number one seed at a Masters 1000. Kenya Shikori, the number two seed, and this tournament is without Novak Djokovic, Andy Murray, Joe Wilfried Tsonga, Richard Gasquet, Gael Monfils even is out. And so, you know, this is one that historically Federer would take off and not play. And now, You know, obviously the world number one and world number two are out for injury reasons. But yeah, a big void in the Miami draw. Although we may very well see a Roger Federer, Juan Martín Del Potro third round match. Delpo's got to be scratching his head, thinking, you know, what do I have to do to get to a quarterfinal anymore?
He's getting the bad draws, isn't he? I tell you, it's crazy. Yeah, it's you know, you kind of feel for Miami a little bit. I mean, you know, I just wrote a piece today on Tim Mayotte, who won the first event in 1985, and just how the event you know, had this wonderful ascent to kind of marquee status. Now it's basically gotten passed up by Indian Wells and significantly, and I just don't think they can compete with that tournament. You know, there's obviously a little bit of a hangover for Indian Wells. It's a very, very tough act to follow. To come, you know, start 3 days after such a great event. So yeah, they're in a little tricky spot there. I think they've lost their ability to renovate and to expand on the Crandon Park facility, which is going to hurt them. You know, even though they still do pull over 300,000 patrons there, you know, last year, it's still they need to refurbish the place a bit. It's a little bit small for what they're doing. So yeah, they have some little bit of uncertainty of the future there. They're not sure if they're going to go to clay or if they're going to move it up the coast a little bit to the new center. So there's some uncertainty there. And then the lineup is difficult. You know, they've suffered in years past. It's never been a favorite of Federer's to go there, and Nadal's, you know, never won it there. So he's always been a little bit of a mystery at that event. So yeah, it lacks a little bit, but I think it only lacks a little bit in comparison. You know, and I think that's fair. You need to be fair here. It's still a phenomenal event, and they get, you know, both the best men and the best women to go out there. And you know, if Indian Wells didn't just finish on last Sunday, we would be very, very excited about Miami, I think.
That's a good point, and I'll have to read your piece on Tim Mayotte. He was actually a guest on the show a couple of years ago. We talked about his nice run at Wimbledon when he was in his prime. That was very intriguing, and some of the matchups he played when he had his run there. But, yeah, absolutely, Barry. We obviously, another member of the Big Four wins another Masters 1000 at Roger Federer winning Indian Wells. Two of the Big Four are not in Miami, as we mentioned, Djokovic and Murray, but we do have a possibility of another Federer-Nadal matchup. This would have to take place in the final. As you mentioned, Rafa's never won it here. I'm a little intrigued by the fact that he said that he intends to really improve his game and play well. I actually have Fed and Nadal playing in the final here, and I'm kind of scratching my head saying, what year is this? Oh, yeah, it's 2017, but... you know, this is real. This is happening. And so, yeah, I just want to get you. And one other point, as you mentioned, Indian Wells really passing up Miami. Miami was blowing their horn all those years as being the fifth major. And, you know, that
right.
They certainly can't even say anything along those lines based on what Larry Ellison and company have done in Indian Wells. It's a big discrepancy these days. But anything else jump out at you from Miami before we wrap up tonight?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's fascinating. I was just looking at some of the history of it. This is where Nadal and Federer played their first match back in 2004, and that's before either one of them had won a major. Federer still hadn't won his first major yet. Nadal took him out pretty cleanly there. That's when their rivalry began. Yeah, as you said, they're on opposite sides of the draw, which is great. What are the odds of them getting through this thing unscathed? It's a long haul to the finals, but you know, it's just it's just, you know, when you hear Nishikori seeded second, and he's just kind of putzing around this year. There's a little bit of there's some openings there, and there's just a few players treading water there that I just don't think are quite putting their putting the results together. He's been struggling this you know, at the beginning of 2017 here, but you really, it all comes down to Fed. If Fed is healthy, and Fed is healthy and he's focused, you know, I just think he's an awful tough out here. And you know, and certainly, I mean, Nadal is looking like he is right now. Nobody wants to play him either. So, you know, you're looking at, you know, let's talk maybe middle of next week, and you know, if they can all get through these first few rounds unscathed, and I think we're looking for another, you know, blockbuster final. But I wouldn't bet against either one of them going, you know, throughout this whole event. They seem to be the, you know, the two class of the field right now.
No, completely agree, and obviously someone like Nick Kyrgios can maybe make some noise as well with some voids in the draw. And Barry, been great. Really appreciate your time and your elaboration on your experience at Indian Wells, being a member of the media, covering the matches, covering the grounds, getting a chance to talk to so many international people, hosting a fundraiser as well. And before we wrap up, anything else that you'd like to share, either in your Wells, Miami, or looking ahead to the clay court season?
You know, I got to be honest. It's a great time to be a tennis fan again. You know, it's funny. I wrote a piece some years ago about when Larry Ellison built Stadium 2. I thought he was making a mistake. You know, I just thought, wow, the wave is going to crest here, and there's just no way the popularity of the Big Four, that, you know, eventually they have to get older and, you know, and kind of phase out of the game. But it just doesn't seem to be happening. These guys are holding on, and they're better than ever. And I just think the uniqueness of this era. Just every tournament just gets reinforced more and more. And, you know, these guys, you know, I was talking to Mayo just briefly, they brought him back to, from the 30th anniversary of Miami. They had a big ceremony down there, and he was part of the award ceremony, gave the trophy to Djokovic. And I asked him, I go, you know, do any of the guys know who you are? You know, cause you won the tournament 30 years ago. And he goes, no, you'd be really surprised. Most of the guys, you know, the younger guys have no clue who he is, except Djokovic and Federer. Those guys absolutely knew who he was, and they couldn't wait to talk to him. And they were the most gracious, engaging, knowledgeable people of all time. So not only are they the best players and the best ambassadors of the game, they're the most personable and engaging and knowledgeable guys too. So so they've set the bar awful high for what professionalism in the sport is. And you see in the younger guys not even almost wanting to try to emulate them anymore. They're trying to do their own thing, which I think is almost, you know, you can't, you know, Djokovic spent his career trying to be Federer, and he kind of more or less got there. I think this next group of guys, the Kyrgioses and et cetera, they want to chart their own course here. I think they want to be their own people. And so now it's just kind of that push and pull between, can we get these guys, can you get the top guys out of there so the younger guys can have a chance before they get, you know, too jaded and too burnt from not being successful, you know, kind of like in a Dimitrov in a way, who had his knocked on the door for a couple of years there, but, you know, fell back when it realized it wasn't going to open for him. And I think that's one of the problems these younger guys are going to have here. That door is not going to open that easily. And they're going to really have to smash their way through it. And I just don't know if they have the completeness to their games and their mental psyche to do that. So, but it's a great time. I can't wait for the clay court season. Hopefully we're going to get over to Europe and pick up a couple of the tournaments there. And it's all good. We're very, very happy to be engaged in the game at this level right now.
No, wonderful, and I'm not surprised that Federer and Djokovic knew exactly who Tim Mayotte was and were excited to talk to him. That's wonderful to hear, and as you mentioned as well, I'm not surprised the younger generation, if you will intend to do their own thing. So that's just where we are, but complete agreement, Barry. It is a great time to be a tennis fan. It seems like certainly, at least on the men's tour, there's a resurgence, a revitalization with Federer and Nadal playing exceptional tennis in 2017. And so on behalf of UCLA Bruin and editor and publisher of Tennis Life, Barry Buss, this is Pete Zebron saying good night. We'll catch you next time on Replay the Point. Good night.
Good night.